Sunday, November 15th, dawned gray and wet, with only intermittent sunshine, making it much more possible to leave Texas. We slept too late to go to church. About 9 o'clock, I went in and joined Ed Weisel Sr., Dr. Stanton, and Don Cook at the dining room table for breakfast, and Mr. Tom Watson. A quartet of more attractive men it would be hard to find anywhere in America. Ed Weisel, probably our oldest friend among them, sage, warm, emotional, with a roster of friends in the world of finance, New York, the entertainment media, and legal circles that it would be hard to equal anywhere. And our advisor through the years, when, as Lyndon says, we need to do some heavy lifting, and handsome, blonde, always young-looking Dr. Frank Stanton, an interesting combination of successful business executive, tough-minded enough to bring CBS to the top of the heap, and yet a flair for the artist and the scholar that always keeps me thinking he's got one foot in one world and one in another. Very imaginative and a potential pioneer in his own TV field, somewhat restrained by a practical knowledge of the balance sheet. Lyndon would love to have him as Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare if Mr. Celebrezze leaves, and I think he would be an illustrious addition to the cabinet, but I do not think he will do it. Too many breaks with his business life, and Ruth doesn't want him to. And then Don Cook, pinch hitter in our lives, off and on during about 2 decades, who has gone from a very modest position in the SEC to being head of one of the largest business firms in the United States. Now in New York with an apartment that looks out over Central Park, he is leading a very rich intellectual life, partaking of the cream, the concerts and museums and plays that that city has to offer, and must have the sense of having reached the pinnacle of his business life. He is a highly capable lawyer, first-class brain, and Lyndon hopes very much that he will accept the job of Attorney General. It would give us such a feeling of safety to have that sensitive and important post in the hands of a man of genuine excellence, who was also our longtime friend. But here again, to pull a man away from enjoying what he's worked to achieve all his life, to get a fraction of the salary, not to mention the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, is a hard thing. And it takes a quality of patriotism that is rare and tough. I hope very much that Don will do it, but I am not at all sure. Nor am I sure that Winifred, his wife, will be willing for him to. And then there is to us the newest of this attractive quartet, Tom Watson, head of IBM. Lyndon is asking him to be Secretary of Commerce, replacing our dear friend Luther Hodges. He was quite close to the Kennedys. We know him very little personally. He's tall, slim, handsome, patrician-looking. I admire him and like him and think he would be a very substantial, high-class, well-received addition to the cabinet. But I do not feel in the least close to him. I believe the first priority in most instances, appointments, should go to ability, and the second to closeness and loyalty. He was a very good listener and had very little to say, though that always charming, throughout his stay. We drifted into the living room, where we were joined by Eddie Jr. and Jesse, and sat around talking all morning. Lyndon took Dr. Stanton out for a bit of a walk. At another time, he and Don Cook had a chance to talk. We had Bloody Marys and then lunch a little after 1, and at 2 accompanied our guests out to the airport where they were leaving by plane for New York. I walked with Don and told him how much I hoped he was going to be able to take the job in the cabinet. He said, yes, this is the capstone of his career. And I said, but we can't make it good. We can't make the 4 years really first class unless we've got some good troops. Don said, we'll find them. We'll have to find a way. I'd like to think that meant one of the generals among the troops would be Don. I do not know. Later on, Lyndon told me his guess was, his bet, let us say, was that none of the three would take the job. Thinking back on it, I thought what a good weekend of trying for top personnel it had been. And besides, I'll never run into more interesting conversation, ranging from automation and how to spend leisure time, to the theory of the land bridge across Bering Straits, over which hordes of Asians came thousands of years ago, divided into four streams, spread over the continent of North America, and finally converged and mixed somewhere south of the border down Mexico way, and in that mixing, producing the richest cultures known on this continent, Toltec, Aztec, Olmec, and so on. We left by chopper for Bergstrom, and then took the plane on to the White House lawn. I changed into my black theater suit en route, and we landed about 6:30 in the dark on the White House lawn to be greeted by a phalanx of cameras and by the cabinet and their wives lined up to greet us, Dean Rusk at the foot of the steps, and then some 200 or 300 of the White House staff and their families, to a chorus of congratulations, welcome home, welcome back, glad you're here. We walked into the White House, very different from the way we entered it almost a year ago on December 7th, but still no moment of high ecstasy. Linda, him and her, and Blanco were close up in the line, but Lucy nowhere to be found. After shaking hands all around, we went to a party for Walter Heller in the State Department, hosted by about 35 top officials, including all of the cabinet. Told him how much we hated to say goodbye to him and that we couldn't thank him enough for his years of wonderful work. His wife was there. I understand the reason he feels he must leave is because she is ill and wants him to come home to Minnesota, and he has been offered a quiet and good place where he can write. I think it's in connection with the University of Minnesota and probably on a grant from some foundation. And so for the sake of his family life, he must. I liked what Hella said later on in a little talk after we had left. We have had two receptive and restless presidents who realize the economy's potential. I have Potomac fever, he admitted ruefully, and I hope it's so, and that he will be back sometime down the road, while it's still our road. We brought home with us Jack and Mary Margaret and the Goodwins for a drink, and when the Valentis left to go to the Harrimans, the Goodwins stayed to have dinner with us. They were deeply tanned and rested from a stay at Caneal Bay in Puerto Rico. He's one of the brightest minds around here, and I feel we have bridged the gap between us and the Kennedy men, close quotation marks, in his case. That is, I feel he likes us, and he likes public service, and will stay and be useful. After hearing them get started on the subject I most want to hear talked about, that is a talent search for the best high-class folks to help out in these next 4 years, I left and went in Linda Bird's room, only to find that she'd gone off for a date with Dave, and so curled up on Lucy's bed. She had just returned from a date with Paul, and talked over the really important affairs of life. That is, what one's daughters are going to do. It appears that Lucy is really going to join the Catholic Church. She has been taking instructions. She would like very much for me to meet the priest who's been giving them to her. She would like to join it as soon as the priest thinks she's ready. I feel very sad, a sense of separation, almost as though I was saying goodbye to her, as though she were getting married and going off to live in Timbuktu. And yet, I've never seen her happier, more radiant. And I know that for her, religion is a very necessary, deep, and important part of life. And this has been coming on for about 5 years now. It is no flash in the pan. So I can't say no. How could I make it stick? How would I dare to presume I was right? She also told me a lot about Paul and his family. He's one of 6 children. His mother died a couple of years ago, and after a year or two of being a widower, his doctor father remarried happily, gaily, and cozily. Lucy herself is so bubbly. It's a delight. She's a very rich little girl. That is, in the sense of loving life and giving the sense of love to others. And she worries about her sister, who she feels doesn't know how to reach out to other people, to give to them, to enjoy them, to love them as much as she ought. Lucy describes herself as a hustler. And so she has been these last few months. They've been among the happiest of her life and of our life together. I mean, in the sense of sharing, conversation, and understanding, and enjoyment. I left a note on Linda's bed to say I was lonesome, that there were bears, an expression we used to use when she was a little girl, and to come in and sleep with me. And so later on, she came in and curled up in bed with me. And we talked over the difficulties of her returning to the University of Texas. A bedroom half the size of hers, shared by four girls. And then everybody sleeps on the screened porch. No privacy, no place to study. Where would the Secret Service men be? And so the sorority house is out in Linda's judgment as a place to stay. The same would be true of the dormitory. And I myself am doubtful of the idea of an apartment, unless you knew the girls with whom you would share it. I am afraid she is a little too dependent upon us, upon the haven and privacy of this house. When I look at the newspaper and it says, President comes back from Texas, NATO, Vietnam, among problems, crowding calendar, and I can think of all those that I would add to it. I know why there was no sense of elation as we walked in the door, fresh home from a victory of over 61%, the largest since Roosevelt's election of, was it 36? And maybe even surpassing that in terms of popular vote.